All right, and you're listening to WTHB 1550 AM. I know some of you online at www.speakingwith.com. Just remember, you can always go there if you got to leave town or if for whatever reason you won't get a radio signal. Speakingwith.com. With Speaking With Cheryl Stafford, and I tell you, you really are just opening up a window of information as you share with us what these VA medical foster homes are about. And one of the things that you were sharing with me is that a lot of times these families that the veterans move in with, and I just want to remind y'all that Cheryl did confirm, they're there 24/7. This is not a daycare arrangement. This is home.
Home.
And the family becomes like a substitute family for some of these vets.
That's right. And that's where the foster comes in. I'm not really fond of that word because it seems temporary to me.
Yeah.
But that's the word that Washington chose. So so we go with that. But you actually do. You bring in this veteran in and you're implementing, you're acclimating them into your family life, you know, to the point that they become Uncle Charlie or Uncle Willie or Grandpa or whatever, and it just gives them a true sense of living, and it brings something back to them that maybe they've been longing or missing, because a lot of our veterans are detached from their families for one reason or another. It may be that the family's detached from them deliberately, but a lot of these veterans are walking around and they're guilty. They feel guilty because of things that they may have done or said to their families long, long time ago, and they haven't found forgiveness, you know, with themselves. You know, the family may have forgiven them or whatever, but because they can't forgive themselves or whatever, they're walking around here feeling that they don't deserve happiness. They don't, that's why they don't have it. And with the medical foster home program, because we're loving on them, you know, and because we're showing them kindness, this unconditional kindness, then they realize that, yes, I can have this in my life again. I can do this. And then life is worth living again, you know. And I have so many stories about different patients that I've dealt with and the rewards that have come to me, just the personal rewards of seeing them change. Where when I first met them and was talking to them, they were talking about dying. They were talking about life wasn't worth living. Their body language was slumped. They just didn't care anymore. And then when we made that hookup with the right caregiver in the program, now they're dressed, well clean, well shaven, hair well groomed. They're laughing, they're giggling, they're smiling. They're telling me about, they can't wait to tell me about what happened on Mother's Day or what happened on 4th of July. And it's just really interesting, and you don't hear any more of that negativity about life is not worth living.
And that's something that even effective counseling may not have been able to bring about.
Exactly, exactly.
Putting them in the right environment.
Mm-hmm. And it makes a difference. Even with some of the patients that have been known within the system as behavioral problems, you have some that just need love. You know, and a little patience. You got to have a little patience because they're not going to start out that way. Mm-hmm. And I always tell the caregivers, I'm like, okay, there's going to be a honeymoon period here or an adjustment period. And it might take up to 90 days for you and that patient to bond. But this is where I need them to be patient and understand that we're marrying two people together. Mm-hmm. You know, we're bonding two people together. And they've got to get to know you and you've got to get to know them. And so it might be a little bit rough for those first 90 days or so. But once they see that you're genuine and that you really care about them, typically they'll just mellow out and they'll get happy and they'll turn into just different people. You know, there's a startling metamorphosis that can occur.
That is just so fascinating. And so a lot of times, I guess in a way, it's for the vet a time of rediscovery of themselves.
Mm-hmm. It really is. And, you know, the interesting thing, Carl, is that there is no age limit. I mean, we can have patients that are 28, 29 years old that's angry because they went to Iraq or Afghanistan and they were walking and they had all their limbs, but because they lost both of their legs and perhaps an arm or a hand or something, they've come back angry and bitter and they're not able to live with their family. And the doctor says, okay, you can't take care of yourself. You've got to go in a nursing home. Well, Can you imagine a 29-year-old in a nursing home environment?
I tell you, that I don't see how that could do anything but bring them down.
Exactly, exactly. And
because it just further exacerbates their problem. In my mind, I've lost my limbs, and now I've got to be forced to live in an institution that's typically for older people, much older people to begin with.
Right.
And they don't like being here often.
Mm-mm.
And so you want me to live in this environment? Yeah, I can see that having all kinds of negative ramifications.
Yeah, it really does, and it really can. And that's why with medical foster home being an alternative, we can match you up with a outgoing caregiver, somebody that likes to get out, and somebody that can encourage you to use your prosthesis and to get back into life and to get started again. And even if that's not going to be a long-term relationship, just imagine what this caregiver is able to do. They're able to do something that the medical staff hasn't been able to do, the family hasn't been able to do, and that's to encourage this person to live again.
Yeah.
And to live with prosthesis, you know, and that person might grow up and leave your home, but you're putting a whole person back out into the community rather than somebody that's broken and damaged, you know.
And Cheryl, it's so intriguing to me, but at the same time, it's just so heartening that some of these veterans, for whatever reason, became detached from their biological families, but after a time of testing, that honeymoon period, they're willing to make it work with this new family.
Exactly, exactly. And that's where it becomes worthwhile, when you know that you're making a difference in somebody's life. And that's why we're in medical foster home, we call our caregivers angels, because they're really performing a duty, something that, like I said, the hospital staff can't do. Mm-hmm. They're doing something past social work, okay? They're touching a life. They're helping heal a hurting person. And, you know, that's rare. But it's a wonderful thing to be a part of. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Do you find that most of your veterans, if it's not something major medical, that the caregivers are able to pretty much work with them the way they would any of their own children or their own grandparent who doesn't have severe physical limitations, particularly when it comes to, you know, if a person is dying of cancer, let's just say, needing a lot of care, a lot of physical care, as well as emotional, mental, and the respite care becomes a necessary part of the equation. Do you find that a lot of these caregivers, these angel caregivers, need respite, or is that something that they can handle pretty much on their own?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because those that really have a heart for it, they don't realize that they're tired. They don't realize that they're worn out. And that's where I come in at, because the healthcare team, once I introduce the healthcare team to the caregiver and to the veteran, then their responsibility is to take care of the veteran, to make sure that this particular patient is getting everything that he or she might need. But for me, it doesn't stop there. Then I have to then look at the caregiver and make sure that there's no caregiver burnout, no stress, as little stress as possible. So I would come in and visit and continue to build on my relationship with the caregiver. How are you doing? You know, what's going on with you? You know, I see you look, you're looking a little wear. You know, there's some wear and tear going on here. Perhaps we need to talk about you getting a break here, you know, or something like. And most of the time, those that really, really care, I'm just fine. But we have to work with them, you know, and sometimes I do have to push the envelope a little bit and say, you really need a break, you know. And we have this thing that we're building up on in our program as we bring caregivers on, and it's called our caregiver network. And what we do with that is we get each caregiver together and we try to get them to fellowship with each other and get to know each other so that they can help each other out when there's a need for respite. Because at the VA, sometimes respite is dependent on bed availability, and it might not be a bed available. So we've got another thing going on, another option. We've got this caregiver network that we're building on that'll help each other, where they can help each other.
This is fascinating. We'll be right back.